Today we're going to be covering a very important series of documents that were released a number of years ago by the Australian Joint Intelligence Organisation, but have not received the appropriate level of attention by the media or by political figures within the US government who have been vocal on the issue of UFOs over the last 5 years. Before we dive into the contents, I asked my friend Ross Coulthart, a respected investigative reporter in Australia, to provide some commentary regarding the background story of how these documents came to be.
When I was doing my research for In Plain Sight, the book that I wrote about UAPs, I was quite struck when I was going through the Australian National Archives by how much information there was and still is inside the Air Force files. There was actually a Department of Air Force Intelligence, otherwise known quite appropriately as DAFI. And DAFI stored a lot of these sightings reports, many of which I've relied on to tell the stories in my book. And they're incontrovertible. I mean, they're there. They're soldiers, military officials, pilots reporting what they saw. And it's quite clear that throughout the 60s and the 70s, there was a very strong effort to collect anomalous sightings phenomena by Australian military people. But what happened at exactly the same time that Project Blue Book was closed down by the US Air Force. And in fact, the US Air Force had its fingerprints on what happened in Australia as well. As we know, there was an official called Oliver Harry Turner, who I think will one day go down as a hero in the study of the UAPs, because Harry had been a research officer, a physics health officer at the Maralinga test range, which is where the British exploded their nuclear bombs, testing them in the Australian outback during the 1950s and the 1960s. Thanks for that, Britain, by the way. He also went to the Woomera rocket range, which is an adjacent rocket range where ICBM missile technology was able to be tested by the Brits and also by the Americans. And because of that association, he got to know a lot of the very top scientists from both of those countries. And he heard things. I'm in no doubt that he heard things. My good friend and UAP researcher colleague Bill Chalker got to know Harry Turner very well in his old age. And even in retirement, Harry was still passionate about the UAP issue and keen for Australian researchers to investigate the phenomenon. Not once did he doubt that it should be taken very seriously indeed. Harry had been convinced about the reality of the phenomenon when he was working in the nuclear and rocket test ranges in South Australia. And so later on, when he was a government physicist and scientist with one of the main intelligence organisations in our government, he pushed for serious investigation of UFOs, UAPs. And he very nearly got away with it. He very nearly got the support of our chief defence scientist. In fact, the chief defence scientist was on side to do this, to get a ready reaction force to quickly respond to UFO sightings. But guess what happened? What happened was that the US Air Force was asked for its opinion on this matter by the Australian Air Force. What a cosy little relationship they have there. And needless to say, Harry Turner's interest in UFOs was shut down. The idea of a quick reaction force in Australia to investigate UFOs was stifled, and Harry pursued his interest in UFOs for the rest of his life, but the official position was and remains that Australia really has no interest in the phenomenon. It should, though, because I've been talking more recently to fighter pilots in our Air Force, military pilots, commercial pilots, many of whom have sought me out since they've heard me on radar or on my podcast or read my book or seen me on TV, and they're very keen to engage because they're concerned about what they've been seeing. Some of them, in their jet fighters, have seen metallic, spherical objects. And you know what? The Australian Defence Department doesn't want to know about it. So 50 years on from Harry Turner's efforts to get answers from the Australian government and to try and investigate this subject, half a century on, nothing's happened.
Department of Defence Joint Intelligence Organisation Minute Paper. Subject: scientific, and intelligent aspects of the UFO problem. The two documents attached are intended to focus on aspects of the UFO problem that have tended to remain hidden. The report dealing with the US attitude has been compiled from official reports and statements made by the CIA, US Air Force, congressional hearings, and Project Blue Book records. The second document deals with evidence for weapon systems used by UFOs. This evidence has been culled from computerized records collected by Dr. Vallée in collaboration with Dr. Hynek at Northwestern University and represents only a fraction of worldwide reports dealing with the same weapon systems. Australia has had its share of this kind of reporting. Intelligence aspects include assessment of real from false reporting, capabilities of propulsion methods and possible weapons used, motivation of operations, brackets, harmful or not, defensive, offensive, scientific, etc., close brackets, for both short-term and long-term, and whether there are more effective ways to detect these operations or defend them, if necessary. Dated 27th of May, 1971, signed Oliver Harry Turner, head of nuclear branch. Summary. The early analysis of UFO reports by US Air Force intelligence indicated that real phenomena were being reported which had flight characteristics so far in advance of US aircraft that only an extraterrestrial origin could be envisaged. A government agency, which later events indicated to be the CIA Office of Scientific Intelligence, OSI, studied the UFO reports with the intention of determining the UFO propulsion methods. At that time, OSI was responsible for intelligence on foreign research and development in nuclear and missile matters. The CIA became alarmed at the overloading of military communications during the mass sightings of 1952 and considered the possibility that the USSR may take advantage of such a situation. As a result, OSI, acting through the Robertson Panel meeting of mid-January 1953, persuaded the US Air Force to use Project Blue Book as a means of publicly debunking UFOs, and at a later stage to allocate funds for the Avro Advanced Saucer aircraft and the launching of a crash program into anti-gravity power, to initiate such programs decades ahead of normal scientific development would indicate that the US government acknowledged the existence of advanced aircraft, which presumably used a gravity control method of propulsion. An additional motivation could have been the fear that the USSR would achieve this goal before the US. By erecting a facade of ridicule, the US hoped to allay public alarm, reduce the possibility of the Soviets taking advantage of UFO mass sightings for either psychological or actual warfare purposes, and act as a cover for the real US program of developing vehicles that emulate UFO performances. The Royal Australian Air Force, together with many other countries of the world, give credence only to the United States Air Force public facade and appear to have uncritically accepted the associated information. This information has been widely discredited by retiring US service personnel formerly engaged on UFO investigations, as well as by scientists and private citizens. The conclusions of the Condon report conflict with its own contents and has been discredited by many reputable scientists, including the UFO scientific consultant to the United States Air Force, in accordance with the recommendations of the Condon report. Project Blue Book was terminated, but presumably this would have little effect on the main program. It would appear wrong for Australia to remain ignorant of the true situation. We lack an intelligence viewpoint that can assess the nature and possible consequences of the problem, a scientific viewpoint that could derive scientifically valid data from the reports, and a public relations viewpoint that can honestly satisfy public interest. To overcome these deficiencies in the Australian investigation of UFOs, it would seem that a strong case exists for the acceptance of the Royal Australian Air Force suggestion that another government department assume responsibility for the investigation and analysis of UFO reports. U.S. official attitude to UFOs. In June of 1947, the Air Technical Intelligence Center, ATIC, near Dayton, Ohio, assumed a responsibility to investigate the initial reports of flying saucers. Within a month, it was considered that the phenomena were real and probably of Soviet origin. By the end of the year, when ATIC was officially authorized to investigate under the project codename SIGN, and with a high priority, most of the investigators were focusing on an interplanetary rather than a Soviet origin. These opinions were crystallized into a written estimate that was sent to the Pentagon in September 1948, when the interplanetary conclusions were rejected on the grounds of insufficient hard evidence. A reaction set in at ATIC against trying to unravel the UFO problem. In February 1949, ATIC personnel on Project SIGN were replaced with new personnel to form Project Grudge. A definite attempt was made during 1949 to use Project Grudge to destroy any acceptance of UFOs. The motives for this are not clear. Possibly Air Force embarrassment at being incapable of controlling the situation, and or a fear of national panic prompted United States Air Force to try and remove the problem by denying its existence. Another possible motive may have been to provide a breathing space for another investigative agency to reach some conclusion. The agency had been assisting ATIC through 1948 and, contrary to official U.S. Air Force policy, was maintaining a high level of interest during 1949. This governmental agency was not the FBI and had rocket, nuclear, and intelligence experts. Their purpose was to study UFO reports in an effort to gather design data on interplanetary spaceships. In light of later developments, this agency was almost certainly the CIA. Project Grudge failed to eliminate the UFO problem. UFO reports in 1949 actually exceeded the number in 1948, and several people who had gained access to earlier official reports were able to contradict the US Air Force. Journalists generally felt that Grudge reporting represented a cover to a more serious knowledge. Eventually, U.S. Air Force intelligence decided that a fresh approach to the problem was necessary. Between September 1951 and the establishment of Project Blue Book in March 1952, UFO investigation regained adequate financial and administrative support to once again analyze the collected data. Project Blue Book was able to process the data from 3,200 reports into a form suitable for their consultants to be able to use. The summer of 1952 saw a more than 20-fold rise in the normal rate of reporting and included the two extensive July sightings involving Washington, D.C. This marked increase in sightings had diverse effects. A component of U.S. Air Force intelligence considered that UFOs were interplanetary spaceships which were about to make closer contact. To prepare the public for this possibility, 41 previously classified reports were released for publication between August 1952 and February 1953. These reports contradicted the earlier official U.S. Air Force policy of dismissing the reports as misidentifications. On the other hand, the CIA regarded the summer UFO activity as a threat to national security, mainly because the resulting crowded communications and defense forces involvement lessened the level of national alertness against possible enemy attack. A scientific panel chaired by H.P. Robertson was convened by the Office of Scientific Intelligence of CIA during mid-January 1953 for the purpose of recommending future action on the UFO problem. Briefings were made both by CIA and U.S. Air Force. ATIC personnel showed them the then-classified two movie films of UFOs and the early results of statistical analysis of 3,200 reports. Because of the vital issues involved, the panel felt restricted to recommending that the investigation be continued, but with increased personnel and equipment. The U.S. Air Force responded promptly with an instruction to comply with these recommendations. The CIA, however, in a report dated 16th of February 1953, showed a preference to publicly abandon the investigation whilst intensifying the collection of data. By September 1953, the CIA position had been largely achieved, with the Project Blue Book reduced from a staff of 10 qualified personnel operating at a top secret level to a virtually inactive project involving one airman. The investigating component had been transferred to the 4602 Air Intelligence Service Squadron, which was trained in rapid intelligence procurement and reported to Air Defense Command and U.S. Air Force Intelligence Washington, rather than Blue Book. Direct access between this Air Intelligence Squadron and all U.S. Air Force units was authorized by AFR 200-2, whereas previously this privilege had been given to Blue Book, although only the airmen, brackets, first class, close brackets, remained in September 1943. Blue Book was later built up to one officer, one sergeant, one secretary, and a part-time consultant, Dr. J. Allen Hynek, staying at about this level until it was closed down in December 1969. During this time, Blue Book served mainly as a means of supplying unclassified summaries of UFO identifications to the public, and it did not form a vital link in collection or serious analysis. Control of public awareness of the UFO situation was tightened by the issuing of JNAP 146 in 1953, which prohibited service personnel from discussing UFOs by threatening defaulters with up to 10 years in jail and up to a $10,000 fine. When service personnel resigned or retired, however, it was possible to reveal U.S. Air Force attitudes or opinions, even if actual data was still restricted. In this way, many intelligence officers associated with the UFO problem, including Major D. Fournette, who was Blue Book's project officer at the Pentagon until late 1952, Captain E. Ruppelt, who had headed Project Grudge and Project Blue Book until September 1953, and Admiral Hillenkoetter, who directed CIA from its inception until October 1950, on retiring from the services, all publicly stated that the U.S. government knew UFOs were extraterrestrial, but was withholding this fact from the public. When the National Investigation Committee on Aerial Phenomena, NICAP, was formed in 1956 to counter the publicly suppressed U.S. Air Force investigation of UFOs, the first chairman was Admiral D.S. Farney, who had directed the Navy's guided missile program from its inception. Apart from Admiral Hillenkoetter, Major Kehoe, and Major Fournette, other directors have included Rear Admiral H.B. Knowles, General A. Wedemeyer, and Colonel J.J. Bryan, who was a special assistant to the Secretary of the Air Force. To reduce the effect of these and similar defections from official policy after retirement, the revised JNAP 146E passed in 1960, making it an offence under the Espionage Act if data on UFOs were revealed. The change in style of U.S. Air Force reporting before and after the Robertson Panel meeting is clearly indicated in the Project Blue Book Special Report No. 14. The body of the report, prepared between March 1952 and early 1953, although biased in favor of a natural explanation for UFOs, nevertheless showed mathematically that the evidence favored an explanation that was scientifically unknown. This section of the 316-page report was not released to the public, other than as a copy to be consulted, assuming the reader knew of its existence. Public distribution was made, however, of a so-called summary, which in fact did not summarize nor scarcely allude to the 1947-52 dataset, but concentrated on 1953-1955 reporting, which was clearly designed to reduce the residual unknowns to an insignificant number, no matter how senseless the identification became. Within the body of the difficult-to-obtain report, there is an interesting diagram. The product of the estimated observer reliability and the report reliability became the sighting reliability. The percentage of reports that had to be registered as unknown, brackets, i.e. incapable of being even approximately identified as a known object, close brackets, increased as the sighting reliability improved. Conversely, the percentage listed as insufficient information decreased with improving reliability. Throughout the years of the UFO phenomenon, there has been a persistent form of official pronouncements which state that the percentage of unknowns would be reduced if more data were available. The above table contradicts that statement. Reports of excellent reliability generally stem from astronomers, pilots, scientists, surveyors, meteorologists, radar operators, etc., complete with instrumented values and accurately detailed accounts. The introduction of good, reliable reporting prevents the ready prosaic interpretation. In all probability, the overall average percentage of unknowns, 19.7%, would have been substantially increased if the data had been more reliable. Project Blue Book consultants statistically tested the unknown object population to determine the likelihood that it was similar to the population of identified objects, and found that the probability was less than 1 in 10 to the power of 28, brackets, i.e., using the American system, the odds were 10,000 trillion trillion to 1 against, the unknowns being the same as the knowns. Since the consultants had arbitrarily called all green fireballs and short duration, brackets less than 5 seconds, nighttime sightings as known astronomical objects, there was an undue preponderance in that category, hence assuming that no astronomical objects were left in the unknowns. The statistical tests were repeated with astronomical identifications removed, the odds were reduced to about a trillion to one. The analyst could not find a way to reduce those odds sufficiently further to warrant additional testing and irrationally considered the results to be inconclusive. While Project Blue Book endeavored to reduce the official number of unknowns, in 1947 they claimed only 14 out of 1,006 sightings remained unidentified. The covert program expanded considerably. The government agency, almost certainly the CIA, that had been collecting data on UFO performance and propulsion methods during 1948 to 1952, presumably influenced U.S. governmental funding of certain advanced projects. One project was the Canadian Avro saucer. A drawing of this saucer released in October 1955 showed a typical flying disc as described in many UFO reports. The Secretary of the Air Force, D.A. Quarles, appeared moderately confident that such a vehicle would be successfully developed by the U.S. A more astounding decision on the part of the U.S. government was to allocate considerable funds to investigate gravity and means of controlling gravity, despite the fact that science had not attained a level of competence to deal with either gravity or anti-gravity problems, and the only theory that might be applicable was Einstein's unified field theory, which was still incomplete at the time of his death. The U.S. chose to support 6 universities and government agencies in an all-out drive to conquer the problem. It is significant that at this time, the current theories on UFO propulsion were a mixture of gravity control and electromagnetic propulsion. During 1955, because insufficient staff could be recruited for the project, recourse was made to an urgent appeal for theoretical physicists and mathematicians from AERE Harwell, UK. The 6 gravity research centres being established were at the Institute for Advanced Study, Princeton, New Jersey, Princeton University, University of Indiana, Purdue University Research Foundation, University of North Carolina, and the Massachusetts Institute of Technology through the Roger Babson Gravity Research Institute, New Boston. The latter institute is a non-profit organization founded in 1949 with George M. Rideout as president. It was believed that to make a gravity motor, a gravity differential was required, which necessitated the discovery of an insulator, deflector, or absorber of gravity. By 1955, 485 essays had been written on this subject and awards totaling $10,800 made for original contributions. The scientists involved included Teller from University of California, Oppenheimer and F.J. Dyson of the Institute of Advanced Studies, J.A. Wheeler and Richard Arnowitz of Princeton, Václav Havelteď of University of Indiana, who had worked with Einstein in Prague, and Stanley Denzer. The objective was to control gravity. During 1955, the following firms entered into gravity and or electromagnetic programs: Glenn L. Martin Aviation Company, specifically Dr. B. Hein from Göttingen University and Dr. P. Jordan from Hamburg University, Convair of San Diego, Bell Aircraft of Buffalo, Sikorsky Division, Lear Incorporated of Santa Monica, Clark Electronics of Palm Springs, California, and Sperry Gyroscope Division of Great Neck, Long Island. Such an intensive onslaught on the gravity enigma was entirely irrational from the standpoint of conventional science, and can only be rationalized within the context of a firm belief that UFOs were real and that the intelligences behind them knew how to control gravity. The drive to harness this power before the USSR could do so would be a strong incentive for the US government to fully support an anti-gravity program. By 1966, 46 separate projects of this nature were being financially supported, 33 of which were under the supervision of the US Air Force. Although details of most of these projects have been kept classified, it would appear that generally they have not been successful. Work on gravitational waves by J. Weber and his associates under U.S. Air Force Cambridge Research Laboratory jurisdiction has been reported fairly extensively since 1966. During August of 1965, Project Blue Book received 262 reports, which was about six times the average number for a month and was twice any previous month since November 1957. On the 28th of September 1965, Major Gen Leah Bailey, Director of Information, formally requested the U.S. Air Force Scientific Advisory Board to review Project Blue Book. The review suggested that the limited Project Blue Book staff and the official investigating officers did not possess the technical competence to properly identify the phenomena, and that university teams should be appointed to investigate selective sightings. This conclusion was supported by the House Armed Services Committee, which met on April 5, 1966, in the shadow of a public furor consequent to the U.S. Air Force identifying the well-publicized Michigan sightings as being swamp gas. The Colorado University was selected for the task, and Dr. Edward U. Condon appointed to lead the project with an initial allocation of $313,000, later raised to $525,000. The Colorado project became discredited when Dr. Condon stated publicly on 25th of January 1967 that "my attitude right now is that there is nothing to it, but I'm not supposed to reach a conclusion for another year." The revealing of a memorandum outlined a method to trick the public, combined with a general dissatisfaction at Condon's biased attitude, led to the dismissal and resignation of most of the staff after most of the investigations had been made but not completely written up. The final report of 965 pages lacked coherence. Condon's conclusions were at variance with individual staff conclusions, although only Condon's conclusions were publicized. As a result of the Condon report, U.S. Air Force closed down Project Blue Book shortly after the American Association for the Advancement of Science held a special meeting to counteract the effect of the Condon report. The chairman of the special committee, Dr. Thornton Page, was one of the signatories to the Robertson panel. Dr. J. Allen Hynek, scientific consultant to Project Blue Book from 1948 to 1969, began his associations with a conviction that all sightings could be conventionally explained. Even though doubts grew in his mind, he found himself obliged to support official U.S. Air Force public policy. Since 1966, however, he has become more outspoken against the U.S. Air Force attitude and has assisted to convene both congressional hearings and scientific symposia on the subject. Although initially supporting the Condon Committee, he became disillusioned and critical of it with the passage of time. It is quite clear that Dr. Hynek, along with many other reputable scientists, do not accept the U.S. Air Force explanation of misidentifications, hysteria, or hoax. Royal Australian Air Force attitude to UFOs. The Directorate of Air Force Intelligence is the component of the RAAF that is responsible for the analysis of all official reporting of unidentified flying objects. At no stage has there been more than one part-time officer allocated to this task. Initial investigation of reports is often undertaken by a part-time investigator from nearby air bases. The Royal Australian Air Force admits that its interests lie solely in the area of air defence and it lacks both interest and competence to consider the scientific aspects. A 1957 request for the Scientific Intelligence Section of JIB to accept UFO responsibility was rejected by JIB. In 1968, the Department of Air stated that it intended to take up further the question of Commonwealth departments, e.g. Defence, Supply, Education and Science, Prime Minister's departments, etc., to see whether some form of Commonwealth agency is better placed to assume responsibility for unidentified flying objects. At the same time, we would maintain our interest in the matter and work with other Commonwealth agency who is considered to be more appropriate as a coordinating agency for the Commonwealth as a whole. There does not appear to have been any fulfillment of this intention to seek Commonwealth assistance. In support of the RAAF's admission of scientific disinterest, an identification list of all sightings made between 1960 and 1965 contains 15 identifications of Venus, not one of which is valid. In every case, Venus was in a totally different part of the sky, or not even above the horizon. Out of 37 meteor identifications, only 9 could possibly be meteors, and even several of these cases would be doubtful. This offhand, unscientific attitude to identification did not escape the notice of the press or various scientists. In general, the RAAF attitude has been guided by the US Air Force public release, which were aimed at allaying public interest by denying the reality of UFOs. Consequently, most of the Australian reports were given identifications without a great concern for rational correlation. Most investigators and collectors regarded their UFO tasks as an intrusion into their more legitimate tasks. As a result, there has been a negligible scientific analysis of the data, and most opinions expressed by DAFI have been largely a reflection of the US Air Force public attitude. With the present reduced staff of DAFI, it is unlikely that UFO reports will receive any treatment beyond filing. If Australia is to follow the US lead instead of following the public US Air Force attitude, it would be preferable to follow the US Air Force / CIA role of concentrating on gaining a knowledge of the power sources involved. However, it may be preferable to act independently of the US and initiate a program that is scientifically sound and intellectually honest towards unraveling the UFO mystery. In such a venture, it may be worthwhile working somewhat closer to the public than is usual in the US and UK. Chronology of US investigation into UFO phenomenon. Date 24/6/47. Arnold sighting of 9 sources creates public interest. 6/47. Investigations initiated by Air Technical Intelligence Center ATIC of Air Material Command AMC Army Air Forces at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base near Dayton, Ohio. Initially Soviet advanced aircraft was suspected. 26/7/47. National Security Act creates both the US Air Force and CIA. 23/9/47. Lieutenant General Twining, AMC, requested the Commander Army Air Forces to issue an authority, priority, and code name for the investigation of flying discs. Preliminary conclusions by AMC were that the phenomena were real and not visionary or fictitious, that the objects were mostly disc-shaped about the size of a man-made aircraft and were intelligently controlled. Any U.S. attempt to design aircraft of similar performance would be costly, time-consuming, and detrimental to other projects. Investigations by AMC would continue pending further advice. Chronology of U.S. investigation into UFO phenomenon. 24/6/47. Arnold sightings of 9 sources creates public interest. Investigations initiated by Air Technical Intelligence Center of Air Material Command at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base near Dayton, Ohio, initially Soviet advanced aircraft were suspected. 26th of the 7th, 1947. National Security Act creates both the U.S. Air Force and the CIA. 23rd of the 9th, 47. Lieutenant General Twining requested the Commander Army Air Forces to issue an authority, priority, and code name for the investigation of flying discs. Preliminary conclusions by AMC were that the phenomena was real and not visionary or fictitious, that the objects were mostly disc-shaped, about the size of man-made aircraft, and were intelligently controlled. Any U.S. attempt to design aircraft of similar performance would be costly, time-consuming, and detrimental to other projects. Investigations by AMC would continue pending further advice. 30th, 12th, 47. Authority given to AMC to investigate the phenomena on a priority 2A basis under the codename Project Sign. Minimum classification was restricted, reports were to be made quarterly, and data exchanged with interested parties. 15th of the 1st, 48. United States Air Force officially a separate service. 22nd of the 1st, 48. Project Sign starts officially. 24th of the 7th, 48. Near collision between DC-3 and UFO prompt ATIC to write an estimate of the situation. 9:48. The top secret estimate was forwarded to the Pentagon. The conclusion that UFOs were of interplanetary origin was not acceptable to the Air Force Chief of Staff, General Vandenberg, who insisted on demonstrable proof, not circumstantial evidence. ATIC was unable to provide UFO hardware or detailed photographs. 13th of the 12th, 48. Dr. J.E. Lipp of the RAND Corporation replied to the Directors of Research and Development, United States Air Force, that if the flying objects were interplanetary, they would most likely originate from Mars, although intelligent life as we know it would be more occupied with the survival than we are on Earth. Our present technology cannot conceive as to how an interstellar race could reach Earth. Even though it is conceded that there is a high probability that intelligent life does exist within, say, 16 light years from Earth. 1st, 1949. U.S. Air Force Project Sign to become Project Grudge, which should terminate before the end of 1949. 2nd, 1949. Final reports of Project Sign, TR-2274-IA of the Technical Intelligence Division, AMC, recommended that only a minimum effort be devoted to recording, analyzing, and evaluating reports, but on the other hand were factual evidence such as photographs, radar, physical evidence, and data on size and shape is involved, every effort should be made to collect this evidence. Radio alerts to other military units should be made. 11th of the 2nd, 49. Project Sign officially becomes Project Grudge. According to Ruppelt, Sign personnel either volunteered to leave or were compelled to leave, after which they were replaced by personnel willing to ridicule the concept of UFOs. During 1949, Grudge personnel did not follow up reports. 8th, 49. Secret Technical Report Number 102AC49/15-100, Unidentified Flying Objects, Project Grudge, of about 600 pages issued with the conclusion that all reports were the result of misidentifications, mass hysteria, and hoaxes, even though they admit to 23% of the reports as being unknown. The report was declassified on the 1st of August, 1952. 27th, 12th, 49. Department of Defense news release stated that the Air Force's flying saucer project had been terminated. 3rd, 50. Publication of a report previously cleared by the U.S. Army describing the tracking of a UFO by an official team led by Commander McLaughlin at the White Sands Missile Proving Ground. From the tracking data, it was concluded that the UFO required an extraterrestrial origin. 14th of the 9th, 51. On learning that ATIC was not investigating UFO reports, the U.S. Air Force Director of Intelligence, General Cabell, ordered Project Grudge to be revitalized. This was acted upon at once. 27th of the 10th, 51. Project Grudge, now headed by Captain Ruppelt. The third, 52. Project Grudge renamed Project Blue Book. By this stage, the staff had built up to 10, all with top secret clearances, and a highly qualified research group of consultants provided expertise. As part of Project Stork, this research group, RAND is a possibility, started to transcribe data onto IBM cards for future analysis. 29th of the 4th, 52. Air Force Letter 200-5 ordered all United States Air Force units to wire UFO reports direct to ATIC with a copy to the Pentagon. Project Blue Book was permitted to contact any US Air Force unit directly, allowing rapid investigation. June to August 52. During 1948 to 1951, the average monthly number of reports was 15, but during June, July, and August of 1952, the average was 337, including 536 during July. The UFOs were not only seen in greater numbers, but there was a greater number of reliable witnesses. Several sensitive Atomic Energy Commission plants and defense units were subjected to close approaches. Defense communications were being overloaded, and there were fears that U.S. reaction time against enemy action was being hindered. 19th to the 26th, 752. Two series of radar visual sightings over Washington National Airport, the Capitol, and White House electrified the nation. As a result of the upsurge of interest in scientific and military circles, the interplanetary hypothesis gained ground despite official reports to explain away the sightings. 21st of the 8th, 52. United States Air Force started releasing ATIC reports to the UFO author Major Kehoe for publication. This was a completely unexpected change of policy. The contents of these reports refuted the public pronouncements made by the US Air Force. In addition, a US Air Force spokesman agreed that the attempts to explain the Washington sightings as due to anomalous propagation could not be upheld. 21st of the 11th, 52. CIA arranged four government scientists to meet at ATIC for 3 days as a preliminary review panel to decide on recommendations for a higher-level panel of six scientists. 14th to the 17th of the 1st, 53. The Office of Scientific Intelligence, CIA, convened in Washington, D.C. A panel of six scientists, Dr. H.P. Robertson, Chairman, Luis Alvarez, Lloyd Berkner, Samuel A. Goldsmith, Thornton Page, and one other, after 3 days of evidence, a two-page secret report that was prepared on the fourth day, concluded that there was no direct threat to national security, but that there was an indirect threat to the orderly functioning of the protective organs of the body politic. It was recommended that national security agencies should strip the UFOs of the special status they have been given and to educate the public accordingly. 16th of the 2nd, 53. CIA issued a larger but still secret report on the meeting, summarizing the 8 half-day sessions and outlining panel members' individual viewpoints. The lack of artifacts of clear extraterrestrial origin was a strong argument against acceptance of the extraterrestrial hypothesis. The panel agreed with CIA concern that enemy artifacts may be misidentified by U.S. defense personnel, that emergency reporting channels to be overloaded, and that the public may become vulnerable to enemy psychological warfare. The public should be educated to recognize balloons, meteors, etc., and a policy of debunking should be introduced in order to reduce public interest. This training and debunking program would be required for a minimum of 1.5 to 2 years. Some expansion of the ATIC effort would certainly be required to support such a program. A professional staff of 12 supported by an administrative staff was suggested. 1953. Section 3, Title 18 of the Joint Army, Navy, and Air Force publication, brackets JNAP 146, legislated that service personnel talking about UFO sightings were liable to 1 to 10 years jail and or a fine of up to $10,000. 26th of the 8th, 53. Air Force Regulation, AFR 200-2, removes investigation authority from Project Blue Book in favor of the Air Force Defense Command's 4602 Air Intelligence Service Squadron, a unit dispersed over the area commands and trained both for rapid access to remote areas and to interrogate enemy personnel. The Air Force requires immediate reporting to evaluate the threat and detailed reporting to assist technical analysis. All written reports are to be sent to U.S. Air Force Intelligence in Washington, mainland reports first going to Air Defense Command for distribution to interested investigative agencies. Electrical reports are addressed to both these headquarters and to ATIC. The public is to be informed of the results of individual cases only when the object is positively identified as a familiar object. Headquarters, United States Air Force, will release summaries of evaluated data to the public. 9:53. When the head of Project Blue Book departed, the staff was reduced to just one airman, first class. All instrumentation plans had been negated except for diffraction cameras, which had been shown to be useless. 1st of the 12th, 1953. The distribution of 275 diffraction grating cameras, 200 to US bases and 75 to overseas bases, was completed. 17th of the 2nd, 54. Airline pilots at a meeting at the Roosevelt Hotel, Hollywood, were coerced by military intelligence using JNAP 146 to agree to not informing the public of their sightings and confine their reporting to official channels. 15th of the 5th, 54. United States Air Force Chief of Staff General Nathan Twining stated the best brains in the Air Force are working on this problem of unidentified flying objects, trying to solve this riddle. General Twining was not referring to Project Blue Book. 10th of the 6th, 54. Deputy Commander of Intelligence at ATIC, Colonel O'Mara, stated that more than 1,000 people were working on the problem. 2nd of the 2nd, 55. William P. Lear, chairman of Lear Incorporated, Santa Monica, stated that because of flying saucers, serious efforts were being made in the U.S. to prove the existence of anti-gravitational forces. 23rd of the 8th, 55, revealed that the U.S. government had taken over the Canadian Avro flying saucer project. This was a circular aerofoil powered by jets and designed to take off and land vertically, hover, travel at 1,500 miles per hour, and change direction rapidly. The design specifications for performance and shape were clearly directly related to UFO reporting. The project was started in 1951-52, and in 1954, after $400,000 had been spent, the Canadian government withdrew its financial backing. When the US assumed control over the project, it imposed a high level of security, preventing even Canadian officials from inspecting the premises. At the press release meeting on 25th of October 1955 for the Special Report No. 14, photographs of a drawing of the proposed version showed a typical flying disc. 25th of the 10th, 55. Release of the Project Blue Book Special Report No. 14 dated 5th of May 1955. The report was originally compiled by Project Blue Book research consultants who analyzed 3,200 reports out of 4,000 received by the end of 1952. These results were used to brief the Robertson panel in January 1953. To this basic 316-page report, a three-page so-called summary has been added, dealing mainly with the 1953-55 period and dismissing UFOs as mainly misidentifications. The more uncomfortable conclusions of the main report were concealed. Only 100 copies of the main report were distributed on a restricted, non-public basis. The only Australian copy was destroyed by the Royal Australian Air Force in 1959, whereas copies of the misleading summary were freely available to press and public. 9th of the 4th, 58. First sanitized version of Robertson report released. 25th of the 12th, 59. Inspector General of Air Force circulates classified UFOs serious business in an effort to stimulate and improve the reporting of UFOs. Investigating officers are to be equipped with Geiger counters as well as a camera, binoculars and sampling containers. 1960, JNAP 146E invokes espionage laws to prevent the revealing of UFO data. 28th of the 9th, 65. Following the August peak of UFO activity, the U.S. Air Force Office of Information requests a review of Project Blue Book. 3rd of the 2nd, 66. U.S. Air Force Scientific Advisory Board Ad Hoc Committee reviewed Project Blue Book, although the committee considered most unidentifieds were due to inadequate analysis. They also accused Blue Book of identifying objects when the evidence collected was too meager or too indefinite. It was recommended that university contracts be made and that more scientifically trained investigators be used. 5th of the 4th, 66. U.S. Congress House Committee on Armed Services recommends that Project Blue Book reports to be investigated by university contract. 6th of the 6th, 66. Dr. McDonald reads the Robertson Report, which had been declassified under 12-year rule. 20th of the 6th, 66. Robertson Report's reclassified, second sanitized version issued, AFR 80-17 replaces AFR 200-2, and transfers responsibility from intelligence to research and development. Paragraph 12b states Air Force echelons receiving suspected or actual UFO material will safeguard it to prevent any defacing or alterations which might reduce its value for intelligence examination and analysis. 6th of the 10th, 66. Contract signed with Colorado University. 29th of the 7th, 68. U.S. Congress House Committee on Science and Astronautics held a one-day symposium on UFOs at which many prominent scientists testified in favor of UFOs being real and requiring international investigation. 8th of the 1st, 69. Condon Report published. Condon's conclusions were not supported by the staff's conclusions. 1969. J. Allen Hynek's contract as scientific consultant on UFOs to the U.S. Air Force Project Blue Book was not renewed after 21 years. 17th of the 12th, 69. Project Blue Book closed down. 26th to the 31st of the 12th, 69. The American Association for the Advancement of Science met at Boston to discuss UFOs. One outcome was a resolution appealing for the Blue Book data to be released. Chronology of Royal Australian Air Force involvement with UFOs. Date, 17th of the 1st, 51. First pro forma for UFO sightings issued. 18th of the 5th, 53. Lieutenant Colonel George A. Urich, U.S. Air Force Assistant Air Attaché of the U.S. Embassy, approached Daffy with a request for UFO reports to be sent to the U.S. 20th of the 7th, 53. Lieutenant Colonel Urich stated that the U.S. is very interested in UFO reports from all over the world, despite the official U.S. viewpoint that UFOs are the result of misidentifications, hysteria, or hoaxes. Sighting details were requested to be signaled with photos, drawings, etc., to follow by mail. As a result, the Royal Australian Air Force produced a new pro forma. 20th of the 11th, 53. In a reply to a question in the House of Representatives, the Minister for Air stated that the RAAF makes detailed investigations of every such report it received. 15th of the 3rd, 55. Deputy Chief of Air Staff would not permit the appointment of a full-time investigator of UFO sightings. 2nd of the 11th, 55. Minute from A/Daffy to D Ops stating that the RAAF was not undertaking detailed investigations, as had been indicated by the minister in November 1953, and that some form of investigation should be made. 4th of the 11th, 55. On receiving Special Project Report Number 14 and its summary from the U.S., Daffy stated that the general tone is that the U.S. Air Force considers flying saucers do not exist. The special report was later destroyed. 1st of the 4th, 57. Daffy formally requested JIB to accept the UFO commitment as the newly formed Scientific Intelligence Section would be more capable than anyone in this directorate. 4th, 66. RAAF publishes a list of identifications of all UFO sightings from 1960 to 1965. 3rd of the 6th, 68. Letter from ASEC to A Minister from Air stated that the primary interest in UFOs was with air defense and that the RAAF had not been concerned with the scientific nature of such sightings. 15th of the 1st, 70. In view of the termination of Project Blue Book, Daffy considered that the RAAF might reduce their effort. So these are incredibly important documents, and they're important for a few reasons. The first being that these are official government documents released via Freedom of Information Act from the Joint Intelligence Organisation in Australia. These documents were written up by a well-respected Australian government official, and what they describe is essentially the most widely accepted narrative surrounding the secrecy of the UFO subject and the cover-up of the importance and genuine authenticity of the subject by United States Air Force in collusion with Central Intelligence and other agencies, contractors, and institutions who have been engaging in a multi-decade clandestine study of the UFO subject, which includes the funding of programs attempting to replicate the theorized propulsion systems being deployed by these unknown vehicles. This was the opinion of Mr. Turner, which is why he submitted this proposal and backstory to the JIO for review and recommendation of action in light of the information presented, and due to what was likely a heavy amount of pressure and influence from the US Air Force and its respective alliances within the intelligence community, the Australians decided to back down and decline Turner's request for a comprehensive and transparent study of the UFO phenomenon. Ross Coulthart, who you heard speak at the beginning of this video, befriended a gentleman by the name Nat Kobitz, who has since passed away. Nat Kobitz was the chief scientist for the US Navy's Science and Technology Division. He told Ross that multiple craft had been retrieved, that he was aware of programs attempting to exploit these technologies, and that he had been called in to examine a material that sounds comparable to the metamaterials that were obtained by TTSA and placed under a CRADA with the US Army. I have had contact with individuals in the aerospace industry who make claims about vehicles being engineered with capabilities beyond the speed of light. We have testimony from credible individuals over the years that anti-gravity has been achieved, that mass and inertial cancellation has been achieved, that groups such as Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, Boeing, Battelle, and others have been successful in this endeavor. This needs to be a priority one issue for congressional action on the UFO subject, and for those in government who are listening to this, you also need to be prepared for the possibility that these programs exist outside of the parameters of governmental oversight, even beyond the overview of the black budget, beyond the knowledge of the Special Access Program Oversight Committee, beyond the knowledge of the majority of individuals who you feel would logically have access or insight. We could very well be dealing with something comparable to a rogue nation, a shadow government, an entity that does not respond to the same rules and regulations that are expected of a program underneath a governmental umbrella. If you have information that you would like to see passed into a congressional setting and you require assistance in establishing communication channels with individuals in DC, then please do not hesitate to contact us via the following email address. We do not want to receive classified information, but we can offer you potential avenues through which such information can be passed to the appropriate staffers and committees. We will never ask you to jeopardize pre-existing NDAs or security oaths, but now is the time for those who have knowledge to step forward and do their part in bringing out information for the good of humanity.